Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say Preview podcast with me, Frankie Francis, Craig Clark and Michael Love. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello, Frankie.
We're looking ahead to Sunderland's fixture against Burton Albion, Saturday, 3 p.m. Any of you guys going down?
No, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm not.
Well, it is only Thursday at around 6 p.m. as we speak. Mickey, you are well known for the last minute Saturday morning call, so there's still time for you.
There's still time, as we would say on Sky Sports News, we can't rule it out at this stage.
Yeah, well done. Craig, you're not going down either.
No, I would have, but it sold out before it got to my measly 15 points or whatever. I'm struggling on this.
In demand. Don't worry, though, throughout this podcast, we'll be looking ahead at the opposition on the weekend. We'll have a brief look back over the week's news since the last pod on Monday. But we must start with information from Wise Men Say HQ. And Gareth and Stephen have been heavily onto me about plugging this. They did announce it on Monday's pod, but there's going to be a live podcast at the Peacock, and that's with Jack Ross of Sunderland fame. Yeah, he's going to do a live Q&A, but this night it's going to be split into two. So I don't know if you guys know this, but Stephen Elliott and Kevin Kyle are also going to be there. Jack Ross is going to take part in the first bit. Mm.
6:30 start, if I remember.
Yeah, 5:45 doors.
Ah,
but
right.
I think Jack He's Ross might be speaking from 6:30. So if you like, Jack Ross is the delicious starter to what could be a nice evening of delicious Sunderland faced based cuisine with the pie and peas as the main course because there's pie and peas on there.
And who was the pie and who's the peas?
Well, no, pie and
sleeves and Kyle.
Well, no, I was going to say that was a delicious dessert.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. But who do you think is sweeter? Sleeves or Kevin Kyle?
Oh, sleeves.
Yeah, I have to say that after last time we did one of these live pods.
We're not getting into that again. I keep trying to defend myself. The more I do it, the worse I sound.
So if you want tickets, you better be quick. Head over to wisemansay.co.uk because by the time you hear this, they might have sold out. You guys going?
Yeah. Yep, I'll be there.
Yeah, of course.
You going?
Only if you are.
Well, I'll see you there.
Okay, right, I'll see you there. Let's have a brief look back at the Fleetwood game. I guess we all saw it. A bit of a frustrating one, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally. I came away from the game just completely frustrated that we didn't manage to get the 3 points. Obviously, again, it was a really slow start, which we needed to address as soon as possible. But yeah, it was frustrating, it's just a word, because we had so many kind of opportunities in the second half. We hit the post and the goalkeeper made that extraordinary save from point blank range. And as you say, it definitely feels like 2 points drop. I was really pleased with how we finished the game.
Yeah, Craig?
Feels like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't
game,
it?
Weirdly. I agree with Mickey. I came away really annoyed after the game, but more so that I felt like it was another opportunity to dominate a game.
Yeah.
From the start, it had gone.
Yeah.
I mean, the stats we've been tread over many times about conceding the early goals. We need to cut that out. So I think the main thing that I took away from it was I felt we should have won the game despite them having the penalty and missing it because of the chances Mickey mentions. But also, this might be a good opportunity for Jack Ross to take a look at things tactically and maybe mix things up a bit.
Yeah, I still felt like, from my point of view, he was still trying some stuff out against Fleetwood. I still don't think we found our best 11. I still don't think the, because I know Oviedo was missing, but I still think, you know, we may see him further up the pitch. And maybe because Denver Hume had such a good, a good game, he could come in left back and Oviedo move to left wings. Little things like that, I think, were positives to take from the game.
It would certainly offer you some more natural width.
Yeah.
And it's not like Oviedo's like, I remember people used to quite like the idea of pushing Van Aanholt further forward. Mm. I always thought he was better at accelerating from deep and exploiting space. Oviedo was a bit different. Mm. Played as a left winger predominantly when he signed for Everton, I think. Mm-hmm. I think he used to wear number 10, actually. Don't quote us on that. But he's got a hell of a left foot on him.
Yeah.
And actually, thinking of this weekend's game, I know we'll jump ahead of that later, but with their goalkeeping situation, this is kind of what you want. Players who can hit the ball from distance.
Yeah.
And even if you don't score, four spillages.
Yeah. Follow it up. Follow it up.
Second ball.
I'm in complete agreement with Craig about how to utilise Oviedo. I think I would like to see him further forward. I was dead against the Van Aanholt one because, like Craig said, he was a left back, and the reason he scored so many goals was because he made runs from deep and he was untrapped, because you're not going to man mark a left back.
Yeah.
Whereas if he was a left winger, I think he would have just been man marked out of the game. I don't think you'd have seen the best out of him. Pardon me. But whereas Ryan Oviedo, he likes to get balls into the box, like you say, take shots on, and he's got more like natural attacking flair, I think, than Van Aanholt does. I think he's a technically more efficient player than Van Aanholt. So, I think, particularly in League One.
Well, I think the other thing about Oviedo potentially moving forward, it would be probably a relatively short-term thing because you've got McGeady to come back.
Yeah. Well, McGeady coming back would be very good very soon, because I felt there was a little bit of something missing between the midfield and the forwards.
Yeah.
What is that missing link?
Well, Max Power, potentially.
Yeah.
He's one.
Yeah.
Two, someone like McGeady, who I think Maguire has looked good in the first few games and struggled a bit without Oviedo because he will run the left wing.
Yeah.
Without that, Hume played well on his own, but I don't think Maguire really helped him much.
No.
I think it was quite a selfish performance from him on Saturday, and he's getting hooked quite early in games, 50 minutes, 60 minutes. So you'd think the natural replacement for him would be McGeady, and I think he will offer you a lot more. He can dribble.
Yeah.
Another one who can shoot from range. I mean, if he has three long-range efforts on goal in a game, he's likely to score one of them, because the goalkeeping in this division isn't good.
No.
We've seen that time and time again. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see him come back. I don't think he's probably going to be ready this weekend.
No.
But he could offer a bit of a link.
Yeah.
Honeyman did at times on the weekend against Fleetwood. I understand some people's frustrations that he doesn't do it throughout the game, but let's judge him on what he does do, not on what he isn't doing.
Yeah.
And I thought on Saturday, that's more of what I want to see from him.
Yeah.
I don't know about other people. I did the player ratings and got a bit of a kick in for giving him man of the match. But I honestly thought, as in an attacking sense, he was arguably our most influential player.
No, maybe. But we'll leave those player ratings. We'll put them to bed now, Craig, because you've already.
I'm still bitter about the abuse.
Well, don't worry. You'll get some more after the weekend as well. I suppose the big story from Sunderland Football Club this week would be the announcement they put on the club website regarding Papi Dilibodji. How did you guys see that? Let's start with you, Michael.
Well, obviously, you can't say it's bad news, because if he's not getting paid by the club and you just don't want people like that around the place, do you?
Mm.
But I think the wording was very interesting, because it's not as if we came out and just said, oh, he's been sacked.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's what I want to get into. The wording was very clear that he's been given notice, hasn't he?
Yes.
So what do you read into that? How long is this notice? We don't know. I guess it's in his contract. It could be months, couldn't it? He could be here for months.
It's an interesting point that I hadn't thought about. Was it Paul Tisdale at Exeter? Who they couldn't afford to sack him, so they put him on, they give him notice.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working his notice in the playoff final.
Mm.
So they then kind of he'd worked his way back into the plans, but then it created this really awkward situation. Yeah. Obviously, that's not going to happen here. Djilabodji isn't going to play for Sunderland again.
Yeah.
What I would say, there's a couple of interesting things. So I noticed Simon O'Rourke from ITV had tweeted that it was fascinating to see how it plays out, which I think we all agree with. Yep. But it should also be applauded by all, regardless of your club allegiance. Why should footballers be treated any differently to other people? If you behave appallingly, you should expect to reap the consequences. Mm. Agree, but I also agree with Alex Campbell, who's tweeted the account and said, isn't sacking him given exactly what he wants? An easy way out. Mm. And the same will apply if we do likewise with Ndong. Should we not take a tougher stance? And what should the FA do to support clubs in this situation? I see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
Djilabodji, no, on the one hand, I think he'd have sat on that contract and took that money because he's 29-year-old, he's worthless, he's got no value, slightly different with Ndong.
Mm-hmm.
However, he's now got the freedom to just go. Like, there's no consequences. So while I understand what Simon's saying, why should they be treated differently?
Mm.
The reason is that there's a monetary value attributed to footballers that isn't to you and I.
Yeah, I just going to say with Djilabodji, like, how would he define a tougher stance? I'm not really sure what more we could do apart from not giving him any wages. So, like, other than like a public like flogging in like the middle of in the middle of town,
Keele Square,
like
Keele Square's first flogging.
I'll be all for that. I'm just not quite sure what more we could do. Because
I agree with you, but I do think that does reveal an interesting thing that is very unique to probably footballers, maybe other sports stars in other countries, but specifically footballers, where you're an expensive asset. Djilabodji isn't an asset, obviously. And Ndong's probably a better example.
Mm.
Would you really want to sack someone who we almost sold for £6 million?
Mm.
The only reason we can't is because of his wages. They get rid of him. But you can see why the club wouldn't be in a rush to sack someone like that. The fact that players have got monetary value attached to them makes them special.
Yeah.
Even if they're rubbish.
Mm.
I think it's important to consider, though. I think we still are pursuing like legal avenues such as suing Djilabodji for loss of earnings, etc., etc. So they're still
could that would be a harsher stance, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So
that, there you go. That's the answer, I guess.
Yeah. I did speak to Kieran Brady about this at the ground before what was the game before Fleetwood? Scunthorpe? No. Well, yeah.
Oxford.
It was Oxford game, and he said that this could be a landmark case in terms of the clubs regaining power over the players. But he did suggest, though, if the club were to pursue a legal battle against Papa Djilabodji, it could be a very, very long, drawn-out process, which would inevitably actually cost us quite a lot of money.
I was going to say it's probably expensive.
Yeah. So he did warn against that, but it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know which side of the argument the FA would fall on. You would hope they would fall on this occasion, on our side. But you don't really find them stepping in to protect clubs. It's normally
not at all, actually. Yeah. No. I mean, look at the state of Bolton at the minute and Birmingham. Yeah. I'm not saying that the FA can particularly do anything in those instances. Football sold itself to the market.
Yeah.
And you can protect football clubs as kind of community beacons, if you like.
Yeah.
But they haven't really done that.
No.
And I don't think they're really going to do anything about Papi Djilabodji's status at the club. It is interesting, though, that we are taking this stance, because he is a special, unique case in that he really probably would just ride that contract out and take the money.
Mm.
Because he must be pretty aware that he's never going to earn whatever he's on now ever again.
Yeah.
He isn't, is he?
No. You don't think so, no.
Even if he goes, you get another club, it's not that bad, but it would be like, you go to France maybe, and they'd offer him maybe 5-10 grand a week. Mm. I don't know what he's on at Sunderland, but it'll be a damn sight more than that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll leave that issue. And a positive story coming out of the club this week. They've started putting the seats back in, the North Stand. Some pictures coming out from the club today. It looks really nice. And the likes of Katz and Maguire
helping
fit them in with the drills. Good PR, right?
Charlie Meffin doing a PR exercise. That really does surprise me.
To be honest, I've been joking on about Maguire saying, like, you know, he's better off doing that than playing. Like, obviously, I'm taking the mickey a bit. But, like, joking aside, it is nice to see the players involved with the fans like that, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
And it looks good.
And it does look good, yeah.
And we're going to hear now from the manager ahead of this weekend's game against Burton Albion. First of all, Nick Barnes from BBC Radio Newcastle asked him about the state of the side's fitness.
We have, Aidan's been back, Aidan McGeady's trained with us this week, but has been out or absent now for most of the last 4 months, so quite a while. But he's been involved with the group, he's trained pretty well. It's been quite challenging physically for him. For all the group actually, but you know, so for him having spent a period out, but having his quality back within the group is a tremendous boost for us. And out with that, the only long term one we have now is Duncan. Again, he's making good progress. We have a little concern over Dylan McGeoch for the weekend. We had some knocks earlier in the week, but they're okay now. And Brian Oviedo will assess later today because he's had a long trip away to Seoul, travelled back home late last night to the northeast. So we have a chat with him and see how he's feeling.
But at least, I mean, judging by Denver's performance last weekend and in the week, Tom Flanagan as well, in some ways you've got an embarrassment of riches at the back now.
Yeah, we're now starting to get to the stage where players have a clear understanding that they need to play well to ensure that they stay in the team. And I don't like using it as fear to motivate players into doing well, but I think they can see it themselves. I think they're not silly. They can see that now the strength and depth is there, and as a manager you always ideally would like two players to compete for every position. It sounds pretty old fashioned, but I'm sure most managers would agree it's the most sensible way of doing things, and we have that in a little bit more because you'll get the emergence of a Denver that then adds to the mix in that left back position, so it should help us. You should find that it drives players on, and it means that if they're out the team, it usually means it's because they're not reaching the standards that we believe they're capable of, and then it's up to them to try and readdress that. So I think moving forward for us, is we're certainly now we're probably arguably the strongest position we've been in squad-wise all season.
And is Tom Flanagan one who will be banging on your door this week, or certainly in training, making a claim for the weekend because it's going back to Burton and he can play across the back? I mean, we saw him in pre-season at centre-back, play it right-back, left-back. Gives you a few questions.
I think he was the one that I felt most sorry for in terms of picking up an injury, because we had asked a huge amount of him pre-season, played in a lot of different positions, played nearly every minute of games, and then picked up the injury 2 days before the Charlton game, and he would have started against Charlton. I think everybody would have known that, and then it would have been up to him to stay in the team. He's came back quicker than we expected, he's trained well, and I think his contribution on the park was good last week. So he's a type of boy that's a great one to have in your squad, not just because of his versatility but because of his character and his nature, and he's vocal, he wants to do things properly, and as you said, because he's gone back to his former club, it always adds that extra occasion to it for individual players. But he's one that very much comes into the thoughts again, and that's all you can ask, is when players get their opportunity, either starting like Denver has done or coming off the bench, that they make you think long and hard about your team. As a manager, I suppose if you're winning games 5-0 every week, it becomes easy, but even then you still want to have to think about it. You still want players that are causing you to not just pick a team and say that's it.
There's been a lot of talk in the last few weeks about the vogue for playing one up front, and I know you said you tend to play one up front. Is the fact that Charlie Wyke's fit now or getting fitter, Jerome Sinclair's coming back in, Madge has been doing a good job for you, are you starting to think now about the possibility of playing two up front, or maybe two up front at home and one up front away from home?
I think that everybody's their own opinions and how rigid systems can be. And probably the one thing for me is that any system I play probably has a degree of flexibility within it. So I think that if you play a 4-2-3-1 and you have three midfielders in it, then it is more of a one up front. If you play 4-2-3-1 and you ask another striker to drop in, you might ask people that are watching it to could they say for definite if it's a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1? There's all these arguments. You know, I could watch a team, we would do prep for a team, and they might, you could say it's 4-3-3 because that's what it is in possession, but out of possession it's a 4-1-4-1. It's all, you know, these things are so fluid nowadays that I think the personnel is probably more than the actual system. So if you look at the number of attackers you have on the pitch at any period, it's probably a greater reflection of your system than the actual where those players are. Again, the one thing I think we still need to get better at is when we do play with one and three behind, the rotation of those three and the flexibility of their movements. But again, that's been hampered a little bit because we've chopped and changed not just the personnel but also the system at times as well. So when I said that earlier about, I think we're still finding exactly what works best for us, either home and away or both. And I don't think that's a criticism of the player. I think that's just due to the fact that we were a little bit bitty with the squad to begin with, and it was all new. And to temper that again, I think that speaking to people that are in this league and that have been around this league, I think the ability to be able to change either for a game or within a game, I think is something that stands a team in good stead. Teams have been promoted, have said that they had that flexibility within the system.
You spoke last week about the difficulties for you of coming into a league where you only play the teams twice when you've been facing teams four times in Scotland. Do you sometimes in your head or as a manager try and put yourself in the shoes of Joey Barton or Nigel Clough this weekend and second guess how they are going to look at you and how you play to counter them, if you like?
Yeah, well, we do it. We're pretty structured in our work and our weekly work, and so part of that is like all clubs, the analysis work we do and the prep work we do for the opposition, but we split that fairly evenly between what we do and what things we feel can are weaknesses in the opposition, and then on the flip of that, the strengths that they have and how they'll play against us. So that is constant every week, and I think that so in terms of how they approach the game system wise is okay. I think the thing that we've had to get better at is understanding how aggressive teams are in their approach to the game. And I don't mean that by committing foul after foul. I just mean how aggressively they've approached the game in a positive way. And that's something that we've probably maybe taken us a little bit by surprise. I think it's difficult to predict because not every team's done that that's came here. And will they all continue to do that? They might, because they might look at the teams getting success with it, but they might not be... They might not think that's the best way for them. So that's the one thing I think that is more difficult to predict. I think system-wise you can say that, but I think how they'll approach the game from a psychological aspect has been the hardest thing to know for certain.
And a manager's job description encompasses many, many things, but you're possibly the first to include goat herd amongst the qualities you need as the manager.
Yeah, I wasn't made aware of this when I took the job. I think previous managers had been sent them. Don't know.
How many goats have you got now? Four, is it?
I got one for the Stoke game actually as well, which was a nice touch. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I'd get one, so I think I'm up to five. I don't have five goats. I think me or the club or both together have goats. So but
there must be a fear one day a van's going to arrive and you're going to get a truckload of goats delivered.
To look after it. It could well happen. It's a slightly unusual set of circumstances, but the good thing is somebody's benefit from us doing well as well, so allow me that continue.
And do you have any idea who it is? I mean, we know there's a name attached to it.
No, apart from that, no idea. No, absolutely no idea. No clues. Comes in fairly on clockwork in terms of if we win games, they come in, you don't have to look for it, it pops through the post, and hopefully we'll have 30 or 40 or more of them that come the end of the season.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Wise Men Say podcast with me, Frankie Francis, Craig Clark and Michael Lough. Thanks for joining us. We're looking ahead to Burton Albion at the weekend. Sunderland playing down there this weekend. And that was Jack Ross, our manager. Speaking about the goats, what do you guys make of the goat? We've been sent to the goat every time Sunderland perform this season. As Jack Ross said in the chat with Nick Barnes from BBC Radio Newcastle, he hopes to have a whole herd of them by the end of the season.
Well, that was going to be my quip, so so he stole my thunder there.
Apparently, this is not a new thing though.
No, from what I gather.
But over I feel sorry for those guys who maybe benefit from these goats, because over the last couple of seasons, won't have got that many goats.
No, we were really sort of failing to deliver the on the goat front.
Yeah, but now...
As well as everything else, to be honest. Yeah.
You know, the goats were the least of our worries. Yeah. But they are very punctual and we seem to be collecting a few for the lads there.
I'm delighted to hear that you received a goal for a Checker Trade Trophy win on penalties, even though it was technically a win draw.
Maybe it was like a miniature goat or... Yeah. Baby goat?
Yeah.
What are baby goats called, actually? I don't know. That's another conversation altogether.
What are they called? A ram? No, that's
No. There's a male sheep.
There's probably a kid.
A kid.
That's Am I right? I think I'm right.
You are right. You're spot on.
Let's look ahead then.
Next week on
Albion.
Cumbie File.
Yeah.
I hate that
gig so much. Anyway, Burton Albion at the weekend then. They are currently 17th in League One. They have won 2 in the league, drawn 1 and lost 4. Currently on 7 points. Are currently experiencing a bit of a crisis in goal at the moment where they have... they've had to call up someone from the youth team to play in goal this weekend. I think they asked if they could have someone else, but they've already got a keeper on loan in Brad Collins from Chelsea, and their first choice keeper is out. So that's good for our strikers. The keeper, just have shots. Get a shot at him. That's what the message will be.
They should be doing that every game, looking at the goalkeeping in this league.
Yeah.
But even more so, especially like people like Oviedo, who can really hammer the ball from distance.
Yeah.
Get him in range. Let him
fly. Will Oviedo play this weekend, though? Because he's been halfway around the world, hasn't he? And he's only
a lot of time.
And he's still got jet lag, he'll be better than League One.
I had a friend just got back from Mallorca yesterday who claimed he had jet lag because he got back 1 o'clock in the morning.
I think that's just being tired.
That is being tired. I would like to think that Oviedo is going to be in action. Surely he got a couple of days off training at the start of the week and then...
But he's only getting back, I think, tomorrow.
What?
Oh, he's not actually back yet.
Oh, he's still playing another game?
I think we've had a midweek. Don't quote me on this one. I'm sure he gets back tomorrow.
Well.
Even then, maybe he doesn't play. It wouldn't be the end of the world.
No.
Hume acquitted himself well.
He did.
Last weekend. I suppose we are, actually. When you start to think... surely you'd start thinking about, again, Maguire, from my perspective, as the player that had come out.
Yeah.
And... I'd be thinking about bringing Sinclair in anyway.
He looked sharp, didn't he?
He looked very sharp. Without Oviedo, I probably wouldn't change the system. Otherwise, I would be very tempted to play 3-5-2 and have Gooch and Oviedo as wing-backs. You bring Flanagan into the back.
Mm.
More height. Was struggling with set pieces. Flanagan looked pretty threatening in the air going forward, actually.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have some more height. That set-piece thing.
It's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Surely they practice that a lot, and it must be more frustrating for Jack Ross.
It's a bit of a conundrum because you can't figure out whether our defence has been really good or really bad because we've only conceded the one goal from open play, haven't we?
Open play, yeah.
So
I know you shouldn't. You've got to think about what you're playing this season, but you look at some of the teams around us, and you wonder would Barnsley, Peterborough, you know, the kind of Portsmouth take some of these chances that other sides are missing? Because it's not like we're. It's McLaughlin making loads of saves. Some of the chances they get missed are really quite awful.
Yeah.
McLaughlin looks a capable goalkeeper. I would have plenty of faith in him to make saves, but you would like to see them tighten up a little bit. It's less so, in fact, tightening up. I'd just like us to see us dominate games a bit more.
Yeah.
We saw it against Gunthorpe.
I think I'll come with time, though, once we get a settled start on 11. And, you know, I don't think that is the settled start on 11. I think by Christmas, we should... be well and truly hitting our stride.
Let's hope so, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then those performances are going to come. I was speaking with someone during the week, I fully expect Sunderland to beat someone 7-0 or something like that this season. I think it's going to happen. Once we get that fully fit starting 11 clicking, you'd think so anyway, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think a big issue that came out last weekend was people the look at the name of the club we're playing rather than actually like how good they are in proportion to this league. So it is hard not to get bogged down in it. And I did myself. Like you come away from the game, and you think 1-1 with Fleetwood, and if roles were reversed, and like say the Mags is what happened to us, happened to the Mags, we'd be laughing at them drawing with Fleetwood at home. You know what I'm saying? But Fleetwood are one of the better teams in this division, and I think they settled for a point midway through the second half, and they were very much on the back foot. Despite Mr. Barton's claims that man for man they were a better team.
And you're always going to get that extra little bit more performance against Sunderland, aren't you, this season?
I just think if you replace the name Fleetwood with Portsmouth on Saturday and we're drawing 1-1, people would probably be a bit more philosophical about it.
Yeah.
I think we've had so much pain going to home games for so long. And after winning the kind of first two, you thought the juggernaut. That's expectation. That's my issue as an individual. But I think we have a bit of a right, not just because we're in League One, but because we've put up with crap for years, to just start expecting to win hundreds.
I don't think... I think it's because we're just almost clicking, especially at home over the last couple of games, almost clicking into the next gear, you know. And I don't feel like we're not in the top gear yet, you know.
No, we're definitely not.
We're miles off, in fact. But I think you can see the potential there, which makes it more frustrating for the fans who watch it on a regular basis.
And even though we've got players coming back, it's a little bit frustrating because McGee comes in and he's just starting to... Well, he was starting to play his way into fitness until apparently he's got a knock this week. So the point I was going to make about McGee is... He comes back in, but Max Power's suspended, so you don't get to see that midfield at its maximum potential, like you were saying. Because there was a lot of talk going into the Fleetwood game, the Cattenham and McGeek are too similar. And I think that was quite evident, because McGeek was actually frustrating me a lot in the first half against Fleetwood, because he was getting on the ball plenty, but for me, he just kind of took the safe option every time.
He's very assured on the ball, though, and I took a lot from that. But I do agree that I found myself thinking, he plays very deep and very safe.
He was between. Too often. Some lad sitting next to me at the match had said something along the lines of wanting to see him 10 yards further forward, 20 yards further forward. And I understand exactly where he's coming from, because he looks like a player who can take the ball in tight spaces.
Yeah.
But he wasn't doing that. And given he was playing alongside Cattermole, I can only think that's partly down to instruction or his natural game. Now, I can't imagine. We're going to want to see him sitting between the centre-backs. I mean, what's the point in this division? You don't need a midfielder that deep.
Yeah.
And he seemed quite limited in his passing range. Like you say, played it safe. A lot of sideways balls.
He seems very accomplished on the ball, though, Craig.
But being accomplished and doing something more, a little bit more, I just want to see him do something more effective. He's got plenty of time to develop and get into the role, providing he stays fit.
I think that all depends who he's in midfield with as
and
well.
That,
if he starts,
but does he start?
Yeah, that's the thing. When Max Power comes back, one of them's got
to... It would have to be him who drops out as it stands, because you can't drop Cattermole in this form. By far and away, our best midfielder, I would say. I mean, on Saturday, I thought again he was... He was a driving force. He was winning the ball.
He's winning headers and stuff like that.
Yeah, he wins so many off corners.
Yeah.
Not something you'd associate with him. No. He's not a particularly tall guy. No. And again, I'm not trying to knock McGeek. He's just coming back to fitness.
Of course, yeah.
But it speaks to the depth we've got.
Mm.
There's the competition. If you're off your game, someone's there waiting to take your place, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good problem to have, isn't it? Right. Looking again at Burton last time out, they drew with Accrington. They also got beat off Walsall in the cup. And the last time they won was against Wimbledon, 3-0 at home. They've got goals in them. They've scored 8 goals this season, but they have conceded 10. So
they're kind of averaging 1-4-1 against, I suppose, per game, which is like, you look at the firepower in our team and you think, well, come on. Come on.
Come on. They have been beat. They got beat 3-1 off Oxford. We've played them. Just trying to scan through if anyone else they've played. We have Gillingham. They got beat 3-1 off Gillingham.
I mean, Gillingham looked a decent team to me, so I don't think there's any shame in that.
I'm just saying people
it's
we
interesting,
came up
though,
against.
Isn't it? Like the way the fact that they absolutely smashed Wimbledon, who we had a hard time against, is interesting, actually.
They did beat Aston Villa in the EFL Cup, though.
Well, good for them. Yeah. Who is Steve Bruce?
Yeah, boo-hoo. So I guess it's time for predictions then, guys. What we're saying for this Saturday's fixture down at Burton?
I think it should be 3 points, because you could argue, obviously, Burton's just come down with us, so it's a bit arrogant to say that all we should be like miles better than Burton. But I think Burton aren't even a big club in terms of resources in League One. So I think we should be fairly comfortable. I mean, they haven't exactly pulled up any trees this season, and Nigel Clough, he's quite like the antithesis of his father, isn't he? He's not particularly like charismatic or anything like that. He's quite conservative. So I think we should be going to win this game 2-0, 3-1, like fairly comfortably.
Yeah. Interesting, the contrast from the last time we played Burton, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
The club.
Yeah.
The squad, the club, you know, everything.
Even
top
for them,
to bottom.
They were very close to staying up, which would have been...
They
two...
thought they were staying up, didn't they, when they beat us that day, but put us down, I think. When they were celebrating.
They did. And I think even on the final day, didn't it go to the wire? They were in the shake-up to stay up, and...
They just had that horrendous home record last season, didn't they?
A bit like us.
Yeah.
Killed them, and
We had a horrendous away record as well.
Well, yeah, we were just horrendous, really. Yeah, yeah, yeah. let's think about that again. Yeah, lovely.
No, let's not think about that.
No, but joking, I mean, I agree with Mickey. I think of the teams that came down, us and Barnsley look far more likely to be bouncing straight back than Burton. Burton are kind of just in with the mush of League One. And that's no shame on them. That they're a small club.
Yeah,
I would expect us to go there and win comfortably. But I think it's going to be another challenging game in that we aren't quite there with the personnel. We've just been talking about it. Oviedo, will he play?
Yeah.
Will McGeek play?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if McGeek doesn't. Because you've got Catamol in there, definitely. Mm. How do you reshape the team?
Yeah.
So I still think we'll have too much for them. I think we'll win. We'll concede, so maybe it's 2-1.
Yeah, I'd like to think we'll get a clean sheet myself, but I think something along the lines of 2-1 as well. Right, well, we'll end things there. The next podcast will be on Monday evening with Stephen Gareth et al. Just another shout about the live podcast, which is happening on the 18th of October featuring Jack Ross. Tickets are now available at wisemensay.co.uk. That's it from us. See you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.